Hello and welcome to episode 95 of Must See Matches, the essentials of pro wrestling as nominated by you. I am Kieran Lefort and joining me as always, the man behind Must See Matches, apparently not powered by mint tea this week, so this could be an absolute disaster. Mark Buckley. Mark, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm not doing too bad. It sounds like I'm the one that's doing much better of the two of us.
Yes, for reasons I won't go into on this show because I don't know who listens to it. But yeah, I've had a horrible week. So I'm looking forward to talking to you about some wrestling, which is always a highlight of my week. No guests this week. We have saddled up the must-see tandem. And we are going to be talking about Mitsuhara Misawa versus Toshiaki Kawada from June the 4th. I'm looking, it says June 3 on my screen. And I keep saying June the 4th. I'm not even going to edit this. From June the 3rd, 1994, one of the matches that people know by the date. We are at Budokan Hall in Tokyo and Misawa is defending his Triple Crown. This match is joint ninth out of all of our nominations. 17.86% of nominations. Even if I hadn't nominated this, we still would have been talking about it within the last month. I nominated it almost as a knee-jerk reaction without even thinking why. Because when I was a kid growing up, this was the must-see match for the Power Slam reading team that I was.
Oh, okay.
So timing-wise, I think it would have featured in issue one, which was dated August but came out July 94. So I think that or the one after would have had coverage in it. It would have had a couple of photos. I even spotted Wally Yamaguchi at ringside, and he was he was the photographer for the Power Slam got all their Japanese photos from. If that name sounds slightly familiar to Attitude Era fans, he is the choppy choppy your pee pee guy.
Oh, so it is that
guy. Yeah, it's the same guy. It's the same guy. It's so funny. Had you seen this before this week?
No.
I thought not. I did wonder.
Now, this is one of those where, in my head, I thought this match was 10 minutes longer than it actually is. So, therefore, it's one of these, oh, it's a great match, but it's over 40. I can't be bothered putting the time in. And then when I loaded up the file that we watched and it's under 40, and it's like, well, I know that there's a bit start and a bit end. So, therefore, this is tighter than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's about 4 minutes tighter than you thought it would be. It's 35:50. I think, in fact, I know, I got this on a compilation tape that I had tape trader Rob Butcher put together for me in 1994. So I would have been no older than 15 when I first saw this. It would have been a comp from various stuff from all over the place. It had the Street Fight and Bunkhouse matches from Spring Stampede 1994 on it. Probably some AAA, which was hot at this time. Like, this was when I was first seeing Rey Mysterio Jr.
This was the year of When Worlds Collide, wasn't it?
Yes, this year, to my slightly biased memory, is a really good year for in-ring wrestling. Like, WCW, before Hogan shows up, has some really hot shows, and still some people trying a little bit after he shows up. AAA is hot. New Japan is still has the Musketeers and has Super J Cup this year, which is a hell of a show. The other things on this tape were the Anita Tenryu exploding barbed wire cage match, show Anita's first retirement, and this. And in the US, as I said, like, WCW are solid in the ring, but we're awaiting the arrival of Hulk Hogan, which would be July.
Yeah.
And the WWF is pretty woeful. So 2 weeks after this, they would put on the notorious "How much does this guy weigh?" King of the Ring that has exactly one good match on it, and that goes less than 4 minutes.
Do you know what's ridiculous? I didn't even know that "How much this does this guy weigh?" was WWF. I thought that was WCW.
No,
that is how much I do not know my 90s US wrestling.
That is terrible. Former football player Art Donovan, who has not been clued into how wrestling works and is fascinated by the weights of every single person who walks down the aisle. He has done no research and even asks, "Is this guy a wrestler?" at one point when I think it's IRS. is walking in because he's, you know, in a shirt and tie. And by the end of it, Gorilla Monsoon and Randy Savage, who are not good commentators in and of themselves, and worse when they're together, have had enough of him and just blank everything he says and plow on regardless. It's a disaster of a show. Anyway, a little bit of context. At the time, All Japan's TV show was buried at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And was only 30 minutes long.
Oof.
And rather than clip this for TV, they chose to air it in full, but spread it over two episodes. And I vividly remember my tape had a repeated spot in the middle showing the join between the two episodes.
Ah.
I can't remember which spot, though. I was watching the match. I've now watched this match twice, as we do for these shows.
Mm.
And I was trying to remember where the join was, like what was the bit they ended on week one and picked up on week two, but I can't remember. It was probably a moment of the champion potentially being in peril. I have heard this called the perfect match, and supposedly this is Eddie Kingston's favourite match, and I thought, man, we should have shot our shot and DM'd him. do you know more about the build-up to this than I do? I know there was sort of like the Champion Carnival was a bit weird this year. I know that like Misawa, they did a neck injury angle so he wouldn't have to take any losses and he forfeited everything, which kind of like left things open to build some new stars. But beyond that, I'm a bit clueless as to what happens before this match.
So I took the advantage of, well, there's someone that's done the research for us in Joseph Montesillo. So I watched a couple of his Walking the King's Road YouTube series, which, yeah, is really, really worth it and helps clue you in.
Yes, especially, if we can't get him on for the show, watch his videos and we'll get the idea.
Especially because Cage Match confused me by insisting that Kawada and Misawa had a 30-minute draw at the Champions Carnival that Misawa actually forfeited.
Right.
So I had no clue what was going on with that. So the long and the short of it is, so Kawada actually joined the same high school as Misawa.
Yes.
So he was 1 year younger. They were both in the amateur wrestling team at high school. They both did high school wrestling. They both joined the All Japan Dojo after they graduated high school.
Mm.
So Kawada has been linked to Misawa, like the famous footage of Misawa throwing off his Tiger Mask 2 mask. It's Kawada that loosens the mask.
Yes.
Kawada is the number two in the Super Generation Army. In fact, the first time that Kawada faced Misawa for the Triple Crown, in what was Misawa's first defense of that title, it was after a match between Kawada and Taue, where Kawada was supposedly acting as the roadblock. So you know the typical structure of challenger has to face the champion's tag partner or stablemate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then once he gets past him, he gets to the champion. Taue fails, Kawada wins, and Kawada cashes in that shot.
I see.
So, and that's a match where Kawada tries, but he's not good enough and he loses via Tiger Suplex. But Misawa and Kawada make up and they win the tag titles by the end of the year.
Mm.
So 1993 comes around, and because Jumbo Tsuruta's done and Taue is not strong enough, they make the decision that Kawada needs to kind of fill that role. So that's how the Holy Demon Army form.
Mm-hmm.
After a Kawada and Taue match where the guys shake hands.
Holy Demon Army is such a crazy name for a tag team of basically two straight-laced wrestlers, isn't it? Like it sounds
is,
like
really.
It sounds like Father James Mitchell should be leading them to the ring.
Yeah.
Like it's the tag team of Abyss and Vampiro. It's not two Japanese guys who just wear tights and wrestle.
So in 93, Kawada has his second shot at the Triple Crown title, again against Misawa.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he loses by Tiger Suplex. And then we come to 1994, which Joseph makes a big point of saying that the first half of 94 is exceptionally lazy booking by Giant Baba, who basically does nothing. Like, the first title defense for the heavyweight or the heavyweight tag belts is in May.
Mm. Misawa's double champion at this time, isn't he? So he holds the heavyweight tag belt and he holds the Triple Crown.
So in the first 5 months, not only does Misawa not defend any of his belts, he also only wrestles for 2 matches of the Champions Carnival.
What happened to the 30-day rule? Got to defend your belt every 30 days.
I know. Well, I mean, All Japan never did that.
No.
But so Kawada wins the Champions Carnival by beating Dr. Death Steve Williams in the final.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, Kawada has a win over Misawa by forfeit. So literally the first win in the win column for Kawada in singles over Misawa is a forfeit.
Right.
Because prior to that, he'd lost 7 straight.
Right.
So between the Champions Carnival and this match, the Holy Demon Army face Kobashi and Misawa for Kobashi and Misawa's tag team titles. And what is the thing that you would do to build up to this match? You know, make it look like Kawada's got a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have the Holy Demon Army win.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming they didn't.
They didn't. Instead, Kobashi pins Taue with his third moonsault of a match.
Mm.
And yeah,
but
that's
importantly, neither of the people in this match are involved in the finish. It's the partners. So it doesn't matter which team wins in that case, I don't think.
Yeah, not at all.
It's a separate issue.
So it's not like it has the strongest build other than Champions Carnival winner faces champion. The interesting thing, so consider that Kawada versus Misawa, the first Triple Crown one was for the first defense for Misawa.
Mm.
This match is the same title reign.
Yes, yes. So not to get, well, it's going to give away the finish, but at the end, it comes up with the 7th defense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And
wow.
So at this point, it was 680 plus days.
Right.
Which in of itself was and still is the longest ever title reign. What's quite funny is there's very clearly a pattern for this belt.
Mm.
The pattern is Kawada, someone, Hansen, Kawada, someone, Hansen, Kawada, and then someone.
Interesting.
So for the second and third someones, it was Steve Williams in that role.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Funny little cycle. So we're sort of doing this a little bit in the wrong order, I've noticed. How many nominations and whatnot did either man get? Like, this is the second Kawada match we've done, I think. And the first.
Third.
Oh, right. What were the other? There was a tag.
So there's the tag with Tenryu against Gordy and Handsome.
Yes.
There's the 6-man tag.
I'm forgetting the 6-man. The 6-man. Yeah.
And this is the third. And there's one match left between these two, which is our last tag match.
Oh, yes. I didn't even realise that. Yes, they're on the opposite sides of that, aren't they?
So this is Kawada's third of 4 matches on the podcast. He had 19 nominations, and 10 of those nominations for Kawada had Misawa in the match.
Right.
So half of his nominations.
This is a Nigel and Brian situation all over again, isn't it?
It's Nigel and Brian with gusto.
Yes.
For Misawa, he had 22 nominations in total. This is his 5th time on the podcast, and we've got 2 more appearances.
Mm-hmm.
The aforementioned tag match and the last Noah match of our list.
Yes. So, as I said, we're in Budokan Hall. You can hear that it is sold out.
Mm.
In case we don't go back to it, the crowd for this match are unbelievable. They are so loud from start to finish. There are a couple of lulls, but when the action picks up, they are manic.
Yeah. There is that classic Japanese reaction of when you can hear that people are stomping their feet.
Yes.
That is at the start of the match. That does not happen.
The first time they do it, it shakes the camera shot that the director is on. And it's not the hard cam.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I know normally we'll randomly pick up people watching. There's one guy towards the end. There's this lad in a base, this lad in a baseball cap. And every time Misawa laid in like a shot or looked like did well, he would literally jump out of his seat and walk into the aisle and punch
air. Yeah. So he wasn't, I know this guy too. I made a note about him. He wasn't even on an aisle seat. He was two or three in and would go past the people sat by the aisle to go and leap up and down in the aisle. Yeah. This must've been the best night of his life. How depressing for his wife. Right. So, as we said, the crowd noise at the bell is deafening, and it's mostly Kawada chants. They start striking early, and then Misawa whips Kawada into the ropes, which he holds to avoid an elbow. Mm. And then likewise, Misawa takes an evasive step back to dodge a big boot. Kawada pushes Misawa back into the ropes off a lockup, chops him, but gets reversed on the whip. And he ducks that standing, spinning leg lariat kick that Misawa likes to do and connects with the running boot, and Misawa kind of absorbs it and runs for the ropes himself, but gets flattened by a spinning back heel kick as he comes out. Misawa avoids a brain buster and a sleeper to land a high backdrop suplex that rattles Kawada and sends him to the apron and to his corner to recover.
That exchange, it was incredibly slick, but it was just slow enough that everyone could pick up every single link.
Yes.
It was perfect speed to be able to mentally interpret the spot. And I utterly loved the whole bit that Kieran's just said, the whole opening, because it's very quickly established. They're familiar with each other. They're willing to block, that they know each other so well that they can predict and that it feels like a game of human chess, but also everything in this opening, it just feels weighty and earned and lets you process it. And even from this point, I'm like, okay, I can start to get why people hype this match, even from the first few minutes.
I think it's because it's big, hefty men moving at speed. Like, neither of these guys, Kawada is the smaller of the two, slightly. Like, he's a bit shorter and he's not quite as thick as Misawa is, but like he's still like very much a heavyweight. And they are, we don't really get Lucha Misawa as we have in previous matches. Like, this open exchange, I think, is as close as we get with all the rope running. So Kawada controls Misawa's arm on the mat for a minute or two before Mitzi does what I call a fancy flipping escape. There's Lucha Misawa. And drops him with a single elbow before drop kicking him to the floor. He goes for his dive off the apron, but Kawada anti-airs him with a forearm across the side of the face. And then we get a crowd of photographers and cameramen obscuring Tosh, absorbing a whip into the railings and coming back out with a lariat to deck the champ again. You can just hear it happening and then see a couple of heads over the backs of these people. Kawada returns to the ring as Misawa lays dazed on the floor. No let up for the champion when he rolls back in, just getting clubbed over the back of the head and neck with elbows and kicks before getting clamped in a cross face lock.
And this is the, and this like 5-6 minutes in is the first time that one wrestler is able to chain like three or four moves.
Yes. Yeah. They are very much shown as equals. Every time Misawa tries to get off the mat, his challenger kicks him back down, and it's a dominance and status thing as much as it is a damage thing. It's the champion is down by my hand and he will stay there.
Yeah.
He doesn't get any rest when he gets back up either, with Kawada refusing to let him out of the ropes, mid-kicking his chest, flat-booting him in the head, and laying in some elbows for good measure. I wrote, if this were the WWF or WCW, this would be the heat. Like, Kawada is quite... We'll get into it more later on. He's quite playing the heel throughout this. Like, his tactics are rougher than Misawa's.
Well, is it at this point where Misawa's ear starts bleeding?
Yes. Just after this. So Misawa remembers the steamboat rule of show him you're still alive with a single elbow, but Kawada has him in the corner and is just almost leisurely pounding in kicks. Including after dropping him to his knees, one right in the mouth that's worth a two count. And then, yes, this is where we get a close-up of Misawa showing a trickle of blood running out of his left ear. And again, he has to roll off to the floor to recuperate. It's a sleeper with a full body scissors as soon as he comes back in, though. So he's getting no rest. And I like the detail of Wada immediately making sure the arm was around the chin and not the throat. And I think we saw him do this before recently.
Yeah.
Another mid kick, but Kawada kind of missteps as he puts his kicking foot back down, and Misawa sees like a tiny detail in something and seizes his opportunity. And he fires this volley of his own kicks into Kawada's kicking leg, chopping him down to the mat and leaving him clutching at his knee.
Absolutely kicks the leg out of his leg.
He does indeed. He gets him in this high half crab, and the escape from this is great. It made me laugh both times. Wada goes around to check if Kawada is submitting, and Kawada flicks up his free leg and flat-soles Misawa right in the nose.
Yep. What I liked is Misawa had a look of determination while applying this hold, which is probably up there with the most charismatic I think I've seen him look.
That's the most emotion I've seen. Yeah, in the entire time we've been talking about him. He's still in control, though. He applies the kind of leg lock that looks like he's trying to tuck Kawada's foot into his own waistband. Kawada tries to come back kicking with his other leg, but that just means the injured one is now the plant leg and he collapses on the first try. Now, Misawa is the alpha. He's using more leg holds and almost breezily kicking his challenger back to the mat whenever he stands up.
But what I appreciate is that Kawada's constantly trying to fight and like trying to throw kicks. So Misawa has to constantly switch the hold to get into a position so that he's not getting kicked as much.
Yes. And Kawada's not dead selling anything. Like he's always fighting and trying to escape and trying to stay in the match. An elbow across the back of the head stops Misawa's roll, though. And while he's down, Kawada drops a series of elbow drops across the back of his neck. And I noticed that whether intentional or not, each man has now floored the other with the opponent's signature strike. So it's a big high kick that takes down, or rather it's the kicks to the knee that take down Kawada, but it's a big elbow forearm smash to the back of the head that takes down Misawa. When it becomes apparent that nobody's going to win a battle for a suplex, Kawada tries a wakigatame instead, but gets whipped to the ropes and clobbered with the spin kick. He's got enough wits about him, though, to run Misawa back into the buckles when he gets hooked for a tiger driver, though. I involuntarily laughed out loud when Kawada made his VPW2 noise on a climbing kick.
I mean, you would know that better than I
can't emulate it. Like, I have played that game to death for over 20 years. But as soon as he did it, I was like, oh, he did that in the recording booth as well, I guess. Incidentally, my favorite voice clip in that is the Japanese guy they've got in to be Vader. And I don't think he knows what wrestling is because he said he pronounces Vader time as Bada team. Misawa hits a drop kick, but Kawada uses the momentum off it to come back off the ropes behind him and smash Misawa in the face with the flat of his boot as he's getting to his knees. The low camera angle from behind Misawa is perfect for this.
Also, what I like, so at this point we're at something like 17 minutes or something like that, and it's already got to the point where they're throwing big moves and neither guy is able to quickly capitalize and make a cover. They're already at a state where they're throwing their big shots, but they've already suffered so much that they can't quickly capitalize. And this becomes a big running bit of the match.
Yes.
And I'll point it out because there's something that some people might miss that I really love about this.
To that very point, actually, Misawa like gets in a surprise elbow, but Kawada immediately puts him down with this lovely leaping gum and giri. Everyone sells this like Misawa has been knocked out. Kawada can't lift him. Wada is running around him, checking arms and legs to get a response. And the only response is a reflexive kick out when Kawada leaps on top of him for a cover.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like it's... I think we covered this in the six man, like the moment where they make it appear like the match has fallen apart and gone wrong. Because what would you like? Would Wada call it off? Or would they try and do a finish and Kawada would cover him and then like we'd at least get a champion out of it?
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
So
Misawa backdrops out of a powerbomb attempt, but gets drop kicked in the shoulders before he can stand and then hit with a knee drop off the middle to the same region. Kawada hammers in four mini sets of kabashi-like rapid chops into the side of the neck, and because anything can be a finish in All Japan, gets a two count off the last set. Misawa blocks another powerbomb and gets kicked across the face while he's bent over. And then after a moment's hesitation, a really hard one to the back while he's down.
Yeah.
Remember how a couple of weeks ago we talked about Dan Crawford's little heel tactics and rough, unsportsmanlike behavior in that tag match?
Mm.
Cowder's behavior here isn't that much different, but the crowd adore him. Crawford would have been booed out of the building.
Yeah.
A lovely shot showing Cowder either doesn't shower or is on 3 square meals of roids per day as his back knee is approaching MJF, I'm shooting my Iron Claw scenes this week level.
Jesus.
Yeah, he looks like a pizza. Misawa clips the bad knee to escape another powerbomb and they trade forearms.
I love how understated and simple it is. They don't make a big deal of it. It's just that little trip and then a stomp to the face. And
yes.
It's kind of showcases how desperate Misawa is, because at this point, that's the third time Coward has gone for the powerbomb.
Yes, yes. Misawa again goes for the spin kick, but Coward catches it. But this time, it's Misawa with the leaping Garmangiri counter to take him down. We see fresh blood run from his ear, and Wada runs over to check. There's a quick flurry of action with Kawada avoiding the Tiger Driver and the Tiger Suplex, but having the Garmangiri blocked and getting a dropkick square in the face while he's on his knees. Misawa gets the Tiger Driver, but it's like another VPW2 reference. It's not the finisher version. It's just the down and B like mid-match version. And the cover is loose. So Kawada just rolls his shoulder out. And then a top rope splash also only gets two. And then Kawada gets to the ropes to break a grounded face lock after that.
Yeah. What I like is when you mentioned the Misawa block in the Garmangiri, that's part of the thing of this whole match is it's the mix of escalation and what worked 5 minutes earlier doesn't work now because the Garmangiri worked for Kawada to help turn the tide. But when he tries it again, Misawa's ready. And there's so much of that element throughout this whole match of I tried something, it worked, but my opponents learned from it as well.
Two Giri related things. I love how when he's doing play-by-play on Collision, Tony Schiavone now knows the difference between an Enzui Giri and a Garmangiri. I guess Excalibur's taught him.
So he doesn't get them back to front.
No, exactly. Misawa goes for another leap off the top rope, and I love the commentator's call of counter Giri for Kawada kicking him out of the air with a leaping kick. When he can't get Misawa up for the powerbomb again, Kawada stands him back up and just punches him in the face, getting a telling off from Wada. It's so funny. like I said, he's not afraid to be the heel here. Mm. Like the crowd just love him. He tries it again. But Misawa blocks the punch and drops him with an elbow strike. They pepper each other with hard forearms before Kawada hits the running boot and a lovely lariat, but he collapses into the ropes after contact.
And I was going to say, he doesn't even try to get the cover on this lariat.
No, that's just desperation to get this man out of his face so he can recover.
And that's the thing for me, and this is one of those bits I love. So he's tried this powerbomb 5 times, and the reason for it is simple. Cowder's powerbomb, he does the bridging pin, and in his head he knows that if there's any daylight between him and Misawa, Misawa, he's too slow and Misawa will have enough time to get the energy to kick out. I know that when we had Patrick on last, he talked about one of the things that he will always criticize is people not going for a cover enough. Here I think this is a perfect level of genre savviness from Kawada. He knows wait, cover is not enough to beat Misawa, so he doesn't even bother.
No,
he's only trying to make the cover when he's literally on top of Misawa after he's done the move.
Yes, and here he is. He's not wasting that time and energy even crawling over.
Yeah.
Like he can just lay here in the ropes and get his breath and then go for another attack. That attack is spiking Misawa with the dangerous backdrop, a super high-angle back suplex, which gets more and more uncomfortable the amount of times I see Misawa take these.
Yeah.
And then finally, the powerbomb.
sixth attempt.
Yep. The crowd are convinced this is it and cannot believe when Misawa kicks out. This is where I saw the guy in the baseball cap leaping up and down in the aisle.
Speaking of the crowd, they're batshit at this point. They're so crazy.
Yeah. Look, as I said, like, if we kept going and the crowd goes nuts, we would be here all night because they are at a constant... It's a din. It is like they might as well be banging pots and pans together. They are so loud.
It's actually hard to pick out the commentary sometimes because they're that loud.
I think so. It's Akira Fukuzawa on play-by-play, like the early 90s All Japan commentator, and Giant Bubba on play-by-play, presumably in a cardigan. I think
he's Bubba, not actually. I catch him in a t-shirt.
I think Bubba gets in four sentences this whole match, or four audible sentences anyway.
Well, by the end of it, the lead guy, I don't want to attempt to pronounce the surname, he loses his voice by the end of the match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we are currently 25 minutes in. Kawada hits an Enzuigiri, a Gamangiri across the forehead, and a released German suplex that sends Misawa rolling outside, and then another folding powerbomb for another near fall when they come back in. Misawa again blocks a powerbomb, falling into the ropes. So Kawada tries to stretch Plum for a submission instead, first standing and then seated. He's shaking him around like that Crawford Cobra clutch on Kikuchi a couple of weeks ago, and then reapplying it when it seems like Misawa is slipping out. But he's shaking him so hard, he's shaking him out of the hold and has to stop and re-grip.
And on the second attempt, you can just make out Misawa's constantly got his hand on the arm over his face to try and loosen it.
Mm.
It's really well done.
The crowd, though, who were all for Kawada earlier, are now full-throatedly chanting for Misawa.
Yeah.
Even taking the commentator by surprise. You hear him, he goes, oh, big Misawa call, big Misawa call.
I didn't notice that, but
30 minutes in, and we're into singular desperation strikes. Misawa will hit like a desperate elbow and they'll both collapse, and then Kawada will hit a kick and they will both collapse. Misawa does land the flying spinning lariat, but can't get over to cover, and instead he summons the energy for a spinning back elbow to the back of the neck and a launching German suplex. He hits the tiger suplex, which... Now I've heard what you were saying about their previous encounters. I understand why the commentator was banging on about the tiger suplex for the whole match. But Kawada kicks out.
Yeah.
Misawa grabs Kawada for another German, but Kawada has his wits about him and runs to the ropes and then fires off a couple of quick back elbows, a chop and a rolling koppo kick to break the grip and deck the champ again.
And lovely sense of danger and urgency from Kawada on that. It's one of the things I've just nailed on for this whole podcast series is how much I love people showing urgency when they feel like they're in danger.
Yes.
It's a fantastic thing that not enough people realize and do.
Yeah. That last one really hurt. This next one might do me in.
Yeah.
But I've got enough energy to, and the wits about me to break it. The crowd back to chanting for Kawada again.
Yep.
A second koppo kick lands right on the jaw and Misawa has to roll outside and he looks like he is done for, but he takes a deep breath, he steals himself and he comes back in for one final battle. They batter each other.
This is one of the best strike exchanges I think we've covered on the podcast.
There are forearms flying everywhere back and forth. Kawada with a big series of headbutts. I told you we were in headbutt territory. One of the things that has always stuck with me since I had that tape, I must have watched the tape this was on hundreds and hundreds of times. One of the things that always stuck with me is the rapid fire head-a-butto call as he's laying these in. Kawada chops Misawa back into the corner and starts kicking alternate temples over and over until he's sent flying back by another powerful forearm and then a spinning one that, to be blunt, looks like it fucking kills him. This is a work, right? This is supposed to be a work. This looks so hard and so violent. Misawa picks him back up. Another, I don't know, let's conservatively say dozen elbows and then a spinning elbow. At the 35-minute call, Kawada blocks the Tiger Driver and tries to kick his way back into the fight. But Misawa blocks the Koppo kick this time and downs him with a running elbow. both arms hooked, Tiger Driver 91, right on the crown of Cowder's head, and it's all over at 35.50.
What I love in that final bit, and I don't think I've ever seen it in wrestling, is, or at least not in a match, is when Misawa's doing those two elbows just before the finish, he does a second one, and Cowder has this perfect get out of my face reaction, like if you're in a pub and everyone's drunk and someone puts their hand in someone's face, the kind of waving the arms away reaction. And it's amazing. I don't know, it just works for me. So then Cowder goes for that Abisagiri, that Koppo kick again, and this time Misawa's got the block, another running elbow, and that lets him hit that Tiger Driver 91.
I wish you could all have seen Mark's rapid fire wax on, wax off motion that was going on there. As we mentioned, the commentator loses his voice, and what seems like the entire crowd rush the barrier chanting for Misawa. And to wrap it up, afterwards they sell the exhaustion for a while. Misawa celebrates with the belt and is presented with a comically large trophy that looks like you could kill a man if you dropped him on it. It's so many spikes sticking out the top of this thing. And they shake hands as the crowd chants for both of them. So as a first-timer, what did you think?
Well, the first thing on my summary is must-see. The second thing on my summary is absolutely must-see.
Interesting. Okay.
I got the hype immediately on my first watch. I get why people love this era so much. This is just a match that just clicks for me. And it's like, it's maybe the most instinctual match I've ever seen in terms of, aside from the Misawa leg work over a bit and the Cowder work over a bit beforehand, everything is about reacting. Everything is about, I think this match to me is summed up by five words. What can I do now?
Right.
For me, it's summed up by, this isn't about established patterns. This isn't, this is about, I've done this, what can I do to follow it up? Or I've taken this, what can I do to avoid it?
Yeah, it's, there's no planning. It's fighting for the moment and in the moment.
It's, I think, coming back to your jazz analogy, this to me is that time when you hear a jazz song and there's just something that clicks. And then once it starts clicking, you just go love the whole thing. It's just, this is two wrestlers that know each other so well that they're constantly evolving. They are literally dragging each other up to a new level constantly throughout this match. This is pure counter wrestling. This isn't contrived counters. This isn't, we'll save the counters just for the end, for the finish. This isn't dancey, end stage, peak New Japan counters. This is scrappy. This is messy. It's organic. It's weighty. It's earned. Weirdly enough, this might surprise you, I have a movie quote that this makes me think of. It's from The Untouchables, and it's, they pull a knife, you pull a gun. They put one of yours in the hospital, you put one of theirs in the morgue, the match. It is that constant escalation. I don't know what spot is the Battleship Potemkin homage from The Untouchables with the baby carriage going down the stairs.
When is Sean Connery getting blasted to pieces in the house?
One of those nasty elbows?
Yeah, probably. It's that series of a dozen followed by the spinning elbow, isn't it, I think?
Oh, yeah, probably. This is a match that just feels like they're on the top of their game. It's so much of this clicks. It has that genre savviness from Cowder. It's got that sense of Cowder finally going for the big one. It's an amazing example of constant escalation. I think this match has about a 20-minute finishing stretch, but it doesn't feel excessive.
Yeah, so you saying that, I was initially going to call this a V-shaped match because there's the high at the beginning, and then they drop down and there's holds on the mat for a bit and then it comes back up at the end. But it's not V-shaped. It's square root symbol shaped.
Yeah.
In that it's high at the beginning, drops down for the holds, and then comes back up, and then there's a high tail on the top of it.
Yeah.
And that's that 20 minutes. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, after the first third of the match, they're doing nothing but trying to win.
Yes.
But Cowarder's method of trying to win is just getting to that folding pin powerbomb because he can't think of anything else that can beat Misawa.
That's his killer.
Yeah, he's got enough to keep Misawa down, but other than the stretch plum, he doesn't trust anything else to even try to cover with it. This is the match where I looked past Misawa's stoicism, and it's because of just Cowarder's desperate selling and trying to win. It's like, this is what I thought Kings Road All Japan was before I watched Kings Road All Japan.
Fair.
So I love this.
Awesome. Yeah, I it's interesting. So, like I said, I nominated this on instinct. Like, I don't have my list in front of me. I don't know if it was near the top or near the bottom as I was writing out, but I remember thinking that this had to go on there. Like, this was a, as I said, a knee-jerk response to the project as a whole. And then I've been wondering ever since if I should have nominated this. Is this just a holdover from being told it was must-see when I was 14 years old? Okay. Even though it's a match I've seen a lot, I saw it a lot then because it was on this tape.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the last time I watched it before this week for this show. We said before, in fact, I'm going to reference it again. We said it before for the Kikuchi tag. That is a match that is painful to have to stop and take notes in. And like, you just have to let it flow.
Yeah.
This was the opposite. I enjoyed this much more on my notes watch. And I think classical Japan singles perhaps benefits more from thought and study than a lot of other wrestling does.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, every time I stopped to write, I would be thinking about the details and like another detail would enter my head.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, that's a clever thing to have in this match. I'm on the fence about whether I think it is must see, but I think that's my Misawa issue.
Yeah, no, I get that.
He's never going to be the top of the pillar pile for me. And I think I might have mentioned, like, I've said it before, like, Kobashi is my favorite of them. Like, he to me is the most complete package of them. And he is the most, he's probably the most easily accessible for a Western wrestling fan.
Yep.
I've always liked Cowarder because he was different to the others. He was the martial art. They were all wrestlers. He was a bit of a martial artist. Like, none of the others kick the way he does.
Yeah.
And this is, you kind of hit on it. This is the ultimate Cowarder match, I think. This was better off second time around, I think. I don't know when I will next watch it. But hell, why not? I'll stand up for my list. Yeah, must see.
Yeah.
If only if you want to hear a crowd losing their minds for 20 solid minutes. Initially, I did think, I'll get this out. When I watched it first time around, I thought it was very good. However, I think I'm used to a different pace and style of wrestling now. And I thought it was 20 minutes of good ideas spread out over 36.
Yeah.
The second time around, I didn't feel that way. And it took me longer because I had to stop and write notes every 20, 30 seconds.
For me, the kind of the difference is I come from it from the other perspective. Yes, it's a slower pace, but I kind of preferred that because for me, it comes back to my issue of so much stuff in 2023 and 2024 feels like it's the same thing, just with different people plugged in and different spots.
I get it.
And it's that same pace and that, like I was watching, and I'll explain why towards the end, I've been watching a lot of pack matches this week.
Right.
And I watched his big 2019 European matches, and then I watched him against Hangman Adam Page and Kenny Omega a few months later. And those two AEW matches, it feels like Pac has been dragged into that style.
Yes.
Like, it feels like there is a Like, there's almost a sheet in the back where it's like, you have to hit this point, this point, this point, this point.
Mm.
The, like, you have to have the forearm structure. You have to have this, this, and this. I'm not saying it's always the same spots, but it feels like they're working to a formula that it didn't feel like in his matches against the likes of Michael Oku, Cara Noir, and Walter, for example.
Mm.
And this match, because I've got this little bit of apathy, little bit of just wanting a change from what has become the norm, this was so refreshing for me. Because I'm not used to wrestling of this pace.
Yeah.
I started watching wrestling in 99-2000 when the pace was already faster than this.
Mm.
So I'm coming from it from a perspective of it's a change rather than the norm. And as I say, from the very beginning, it clicked in my head what this match is. So I was constantly looking for it, and it was exactly what I needed at the time.
Mm. I think we can agree that this is the moment where the jazz hits the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is 6 stars in the Observer back in 1994, when the scale definitely only went to 5, and is currently 9.71 on Cage Match. In the Observer Awards, it came 2nd in Match of the Year behind the WrestleMania 10 ladder match, which we covered way back on episode 2.
I'm sorry, the only reason that was number 1 is because lots of people watched WWF and didn't watch All Japan.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I did have the rest of the top 5 open and I closed it, but I have seen all of the top 5 for 1994 and I understand the case for all of them.
Okay.
It was those two matches, the final of Super J Cup.
Yeah.
The When Worlds Collide tag.
Yeah.
Eddie Guerrero and Art Barr versus Santo and Octagon, and I cannot remember what the other one is.
Would it have been All Japan Women's?
The fifth one was Terry Funk versus Sabu versus Shane Douglas from the night the line was crossed. So the first three-way in American wrestling, really, like the first widely seen three-way dance in American wrestling, and that's like a 60-minute, one-hour draw. Like that was the show and the match that put ECW on the map and made people pay attention.
Yeah.
So yes, there's your top 5. Kawada, Wrestler of the Year in the Observer. And All Japan came 2nd in Promotion of the Year behind AAA, which, as I said at the beginning, was on a hot streak in 1994. Anything else to add? Or should we wrap this up and take it home?
I think let's take it home, shall we?
All right. For everything to do with this show, you can go to linktr.ee/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations, and much, much more. We are at Musty Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. And on Discord, you can go to bit.ly/mustseematchesdiscord. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter, and Mark is
at monkey_buckles.
I also have another show. Every month, Nothing and Like It chronicles the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance's adventures on television. You can find everything to do with that at linktr.ee/fwapod. Episode 4 is out now. Mark, I hear you've been cheating on me. Tell everybody what you've been up to.
So for the first time since probably 2020, I recorded a podcast that Kieran wasn't on.
How dare you?
Yep. So I was kindly invited to join Alan Forel on the Pro Wrestling Torch VIP show that he does, Pro Wrest Paradise, and it was part of his 34L30 series.
Mm.
And sadly, it wasn't on someone like Yoshihito Sasaki. Yoshihiko. Nope. It was instead on Puck, and it was a lovely time, and we discussed so much about Puck, and basically how he went from a high flyer with a good base to maybe being one of the best veterans in the wrestling scene for the modern style. And we cover all aspects of his career, and it's a lovely chat, and that should be out by the time this podcast is out.
Yes, you will need a Torch VIP subscription to listen to that, I do believe.
Yes.
But to be honest, Alan's shows, I think, are worth that alone. They're always good.
I have literally been a subscriber in the past for Torch VIP, and all I listen to is Alan's shows.
That's pretty much where I am at the moment.
Literally subscribe to it and just been through the 34L30 series. Yep. Kieran and I did an episode a couple of years back on Corican Hall, mm-hmm. which is a great listen. Alan's got so many different sub shows on there. The What's on the Telly.
That's a great, great show.
Yeah.
I've done an episode of that. I did a 34L. I did 34L30 on Vader way back at the beginning of that that run. Go and listen to that. Alan and Mark talking about Pack. Tremendous. Next week, as has become customary on this show, we finish off a rivalry in the wrong order. Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada from Wrestle Kingdom 11, January the 4th, 2017. And our guest will also be from the Pro Wrestling Torch, the return of Rich Fan. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.